How do self-driving cars influence the way we listen to music? How does artificial intelligence change our culture? And what about copyright issues? In a panel discussion with experts from art, car design, and politics, we talked about those topics at the Art Meets Tech conference in Beijing. It's the first conference of its kind, and there are more to come. My name is Matthias Röder, and I'm the managing director of the Aliette and Herbert von Karajan Institute in Salzburg. Together with the Department Cultural Engagement from Volkswagen Communications, we organized the conference.
Ni hao. I'm very honored to be here today with you. I hope that you already had a really good time with the experience in the car and with the piano. And I would now like to take you on a journey, a short journey into the future. And our goal today is to excite you with new ideas about how the car of the future will look like and what role music and culture and the arts will play in it. So if you walk away from this event later on with some new ideas about how the future is going to look like and you are a little bit excited by that, then I think we did a good job. So I welcome my panelists on the stage. Please join me here. I want to introduce the panel to you. I'll start with Peter Ortlieb. Peter is the head of design for the Volkswagen Future Center Asia. We agreed that we do very short introductions. And I asked the panelists to think about what is your dream car in the future. So Peter, what's yours? It's a job question.
Yeah. It's the easy one. It's something I will talk about later too. For me, my dream car of the future is actually a real sculpture on wheels, which is also my personal companion, so who really knows me and excites me through the form.
Great, thank you. Holger Folland, you are responsible for the business development at the book fair in Frankfurt, and Holger typically says the Frankfurt Book Fair is not only about books and it's not only in Frankfurt. So we are delighted to have you here. Holger, what's your dream car?
Well, my dream car is, of course, everything that Professor Heitzmann already mentioned. It's the mobile device. It's the one that you probably don't have to own, but you can use it flexible. It's a device that becomes a concert hall as well as, of course, a reading room coming from Frankfurt Book Fair. But most important for me, the car of the future is not important anymore for me. I don't need a car. I need mobility in the future. And a car is, for me, in the future, is a device. Probably a device that I love more than other devices, like airplanes, probably, because they're too big. But it's a device that plays a vital role in my life. And that does not only exist in the real world, but also in the virtual world. Yeah. So for me, mobility of the future is the combination of virtual mobility as well as real mobility. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to see how the devices for these two kinds of mobilities are going to develop.
Thank you. Daniel Hope, world star violinist, we're really glad to have you here. What is your dream car of the future?
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's wonderful to be here. My dream car, well, you know, music defines my life. So if I can bring mobility together with music, if I can listen to and absorb music while being mobile, that is my ideal. And personally, I also love to fly. So if Volkswagen wants to build a car which flies as well, I'll be your first customer.
Great, thank you very much. I'll jump over to Tim Renner. Tim, you have a very interesting background. You started a very important music company in Germany called Motor. You were the CEO of Universal Music in Germany. And then you became a politician, and you were responsible in one of the biggest tech hubs in Europe for the sector of culture. Tell us about your dream car of the future.
My dream car is not really a car anymore. My dream car simply is a prolongation of my living room. So it feels like not leaving home. It enables me to do whatever I want and to have got direct access to all forms of culture and communication.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Finally, Nick Yap. We met a while ago because Nick is producing right now something which is really exciting. It's an open source, open platform smart speaker, which is blockchain enabled. So, Nick, tell us a little bit about your dream car.
Yes, I'm going to go a little bit further than an extension of the living space. I would like my dream car to be an extension of my personality. So there is involvement of what my music taste is like, what my food is like. Because eventually, why do I get into a car? Because I need to go to places. Maybe because I need to go to places. Maybe because I want to go to places. And that extension of my personality needs to be decentralized. Because can you imagine somebody owning all of that of me? I would prefer it stored within me, where I get to allow or disallow other people to decide what to do with it. And that is one of the reasons why we find it very important to do this open source as well as on the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And in this way, we don't let a third party control exactly the most sensitive information about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And in that way, the car is no longer just a car, but
yeah.
me.
Yeah. So you see, we have a lot of different perspectives on the future of the car, on the dream cars. Let's hear from a person who is designing cars and designing the future as a job. Peter, maybe you want to share with us some observations on what it is to design future cars, really.
Yeah, I would really like to. I prepared a few slides just to explain more easily what for us, from our perspective, how and why cars will change dramatically. So I call it the autonomous freedom. Why freedom? Because the technology of AI will give us freedom in two ways. One, freedom because the car will be driven by an AI. We have freedom in the form, how it will look like. This I will explain. And then freedom also because it will know us better. And so, well, as you mentioned, right, so the car is my personal companion. It will know us and give us more freedom and in control of it, right? This is more or less stays for a traditional car today. Most of the cars in China, you know, the limousines, and it has a reason why it looks like this. So the main reason is because we have to drive, right? So because I have to drive, I have this form. So you have the hood, there's the engine, I have the windscreen because I have to look in this direction. And I have to look to the side to see, to observe the traffic. In the future, if the car has no steering wheel and I don't need to drive, we have seen the Cedric is one example, then this will change dramatically. It's something like we are all used to. So if we use public transportation, like subway, train or plane, we don't have something where we look in the front. We are all fine with just seeing the side, because we are all busy with something, right? Enjoying music or whatsoever. And even in a taxi, we sit in the back, we have the seat in front of us. So if you think on the future, then I'm very sure, also not just Cedric for mobility as a service, but also private cars will change dramatically because you don't need the windscreen. Mm-hmm. And it gives us as a designer much more freedom to create sculptures. That was the topic before. Because we can face each other and we can play. It's all around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is something where, it's just a few examples, where we play with forms. We really start as sculptures because we are not limited in this, not so limited like today with, mm-hmm. with cars so you have to drive. Mm-hmm. So we start more from the perspective of a culture mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. taking many technologies in consideration if we build this. Similar like in architecture. But we see in the recent years, you see this parametric design in architecture with these unique structures which are flowing, right? Mm-hmm. Because the technology makes it possible these days. And the computer calculates the structures. Nobody could do it by hand. Mm-hmm. And this will influence also the future of the car industry.
That's fascinating. So in a way, yeah. Technology enables our creativity to be more free because we are now moving away from a design that is focused on functional aspects. You know, you have to be able to view the road. You have to be able to see everything and control everything towards something that is not functional, that is purely, is it purely creative? Or what is it then?
I think it's creative, and that's. I think it fits to the topic today. It's art, mm-hmm. right? 2 weeks ago, I've been on Pebble Beach. It's It's Consorce d'Elegance. It's an event in the States where they present and sell also classic cars. So the best classic cars in the world, they go to this event, they present the cars, and some of them are being sold in the range of $40 million, $50 million. And those cars are never driven. They are considered as art. Mm-hmm. And those were back then just functional. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are all, many perceived as art, like the Bugattis or other brands mm-hmm. back then. Mm-hmm. And people treat this as art, mm-hmm. even though it was very functional back then. Mm-hmm. And this will, and today with this technology, provides us even more freedom towards creativity and sculptural forms. Mm-hmm. So I'm very sure we will make cars. So you would reconsider your opinion, not owning one, because it will be so emotional that you will consider it more than more a sculpture than a mobility device.
Interesting. Yeah. So I want to go back to the topic of mobility as a service, because I find it very interesting that on the one hand, we envision a future in which mobility can be booked like a service. You know, if we have like the fifth stage or level of autonomous driving, then we can basically summon a car with the press of a button or maybe with a voice command, Nick, and the car will be there for me to use. But at the same time, you're saying we have this individualization of the design, and that is really exciting. Will people then own a car like a piece of art, but for day-to-day commute, they will use a standard car, or what do you think?
I think it will be a mix of both, like mm-hmm. today. I live in Beijing now for a year, and sometimes, like the one day of the week when I have the band day and I have to use Didi, I actually enjoy it too, and sometimes mm-hmm. I consider doing this more often because of this bad traffic jam here. Mm-hmm. But I also like to drive. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and then in the next point, I love cars and the emotion around cars and form them, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. many other cars are doing, mm-hmm. right? You buy a car to identify yourself with something, mm-hmm. to show your social status, mm-hmm. but also to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I think in the time when the car can drive itself, it will be. It will take a lot of pain points of driving mm-hmm. because if you have traffic jam, so the car can take over mm-hmm. your own car.
Yeah.
If there is no, you enjoy driving.
Okay.
If you arrive at the city, like I today, no parking space, so the car finds a place for you, your own car.
Send it off to do the shopping.
Yes, or that. So the benefit of just mobility as a service, where I don't own something,
yeah.
Will compete with private cars yeah. because private cars have a lot of benefits. Yeah. Like, I agree totally with you, where you said we want our life in the car. And this is today also. You see the cars here in China. People bring everything in there. Right?
Yeah.
Because it's an extension of their place,
yeah,
of
yeah.
their home.
And, really.
Yeah. And then imagine now you have more freedom, like how you position the seats and everything. Mm-hmm. It would be even more living space mm-hmm. in your home.
So,
and you want to own it, I think.
Yeah. I want to turn to you, Holger. You wrote a book on the power of the creative machine, or the creative power of the machine. That's what the translation would be like. So in the book, you explain to your readers how technologies that are based on artificial intelligence are actually changing the way that we interact with the world, but also how we're going to create. How do you see this topic of creativity, mobility, and what do you think is going to be the important force here? Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, when you mentioned that design, the design of car parts or of even of cars, the shapes are already supported by AI that tries to find just the perfect shape for one scenario. That reminded me of actually an artist in Berlin. His name is Roman Lipsky, and he is interesting not so much because of his art, I think, but because of how he uses artificial intelligence. He had an AI programmed that used his own work as the source, and then the AI developed new versions of the work that the artist already had painted.
Uh-huh.
So he used it as a tool to actually grow his own creativity and his own way of expressing himself by thinking, okay, just take whatever I did before in my life as a source and make something out of it. And I think that we're going to experience many of these fields, like music composers. They are going to use many, many AI-driven tools also in order to find new ways of create and write music. And of course, we're going to have creative AI that takes over the job completely. And that is probably one point where we have to have a closer look. Because when AI takes over the creative process completely without a human being feeling the artistic pressure to create something, or feeling, as in your case, the designer's responsibility for the product. Without that human being, we might have also some fields where we trust in something that was automatically created, but actually is probably not as good as if a human had been like the last person in the productive chain.
Thank you. Daniel, I want to jump to you because Holger just basically talked about music. And would you feel comfortable if someone analyzed, some AI analyzed your style of playing and then take your style of playing on the violin and transfer it to the piano? And then I could have my Bach French suites performed in your style, but you don't even play the piano?
Well, I think it depends if I get a royalty from Deutsche Grammophon. No, I think it's fascinating. Yeah. And for example, I know that there's been a lot of research done with music and medicine and what music does to the brain, for example, and musicians who have been scanned while listening to music, while performing music, to see what kind of influences come from their body, what kind of things generate other people's thoughts. We know that music is used in the treatment of Alzheimer, in dementia, in autism. So I think we're in agreement that the power of music is unstoppable. Mm-hmm. But what we do to nurture it and to cultivate its strengths, I think, is a very exciting thing. So yes, I would be very, I'd be fascinated, in fact, to see. I mean, I know in Japan there was a violin robot where they imitated the exact pressure on the bow of a very famous violinist, and the robot performed. And you know, I listened to it, and yes, it was in a sense a sampled version of that violinist. But there was this huge discrepancy to a real violinist standing there and performing. Would the one supersede the other? I don't know. Perhaps one day. But I think I'm confident for humankind still for the next few centuries that we still have something to say. At least I hope so.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit about the projects that you do with technology and music. You have been very active in the field, and from what I understand, your goal is also to bring these two worlds together.
I mean, I started very basically just by reading music off an iPad. I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. There are a number of fantastic apps that transfer the music into the iPad. You can mark it digitally when you play with an orchestra. If you can persuade all of the musicians to also play on iPads, you can send around the bowings, you can have different communication skills between the orchestra themselves. We've done with the Yellow Lounges, we've opened up to worldwide audiences where people have contacted us during the concert, have decided on the encore we're going to play, where you suddenly take the classical music experience out of a single room and make it global, make it worldwide. And that, as a musician, is incredibly exciting. The fact that, you know, we're sitting here in Beijing, tonight we're going to play the first Yellow Lounge, and people around the world can go onto the internet and can actually take part. I think the next step is going to be the responsive, proactive approach, that people have the feeling that they're not just listening, but they're actually there. And perhaps they're even inspiring what's going on. I've also done projects with tech guys who have taken the sound waves from our performance and have created animation live to that. And that's very exciting, because to see what's going on as you play, you play differently, it creates a different impulse.
Yeah.
I've worked with painters who have painted to the music. And when that gets to the digital level, it's fascinating to see because people define the feelings of music mm-hmm. all very differently. But when the immersion between technology and the feeling of music is so close, mm-hmm. There's a kind of a synthesis that takes place, mm-hmm. which I think is actually very creative.
Mm-hmm. Right. Wonderful, thank you. Tim, how do you respond to this? This is sort of a very, you know, positive and rosy picture of how humans and machine will work together. You have worked as a politician and you see the day-to-day, you know, difficulties of actually integrating some of this technology into our society. Do you share this vision? What are your thoughts on this?
In general, I share the vision, but of course, if I look at it as a politician, I also see some dangers and things where we really have to be careful. And you already mentioned it, Oliver. It's pretty much like when a machine becomes creative. It's taking over some means of mankind. Mankind is about empathy, creativity, ideas. Mankind is for question. Computers are for answers. So there's kind of split in the job. And is it really take over our job as mankind? There's no mankind anymore. So technology is for supporting mankind. And that's where, for me, there's a really clear barrier where I would say a machine can do every imaginable job, but as soon as it comes to the decision, a creative decision, the decision should be on the mankind. As comes to ethical decision, should he has got cancer, should we support him, yes or no? It's an ethical decision, should be on mankind. So that is kind of, for me, the clear border that we have to understand and we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. If I may, I would like to ask a question for Professor Heitzmann at this point. I think we'll just give you this microphone. We've heard so far that you know, there are a lot of opportunities coming up for the future of automobile. In your perspective, what are some of the difficult challenges that you are facing as an automobile company in making this vision come true? Could you share a little bit about sort of from the battleground? You know, what's really the hardest part of this?
First, I really want to thank you for this really important and innovative inputs in your discussion. Let's say we are talking a lot, and you as well talked a lot about mobility as a service. And for me, this would be a little bit of modification in relation to the discussion. For me, mobility service as well is not only related to shared mobility, to non-owned car business, but as well with additional demands and challenges in the classical owned business. No? Mm-hmm. Giving you an example, well, we are talking a lot about pure battery cars, e-cars. Yeah? They have to be charged. Yeah? You have to look for solutions that your customers can charge them, and maybe not only that they can just charge them. The question is, where are charging facilities? Yeah? Are they free? Can you reserve? Are they clean? What mm-hmm. can you do while charging? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Is there a playing ground for your kids? Such questions. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Then it's get interesting mm-hmm. yeah? As additional services for the customers. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Or let's say, of course, we are talking a lot about connectivity and what does that mean as additional informations for the customers to give them additional service. For example, well, we just discussed if you go into a navigation system, of course, you get the same information if it is day or night. Mm-hmm. Maybe restaurants are not every time open. Yeah? Such questions, of course, are interesting for additional services, mobility as a service. And then, of course, it's the tremendous development that shared mobility means you don't own the car, it's car sharing, it's ride hailing,
is as well public transportation, goes maybe in the future into this direction of autonomous driving, self-driving cars. Sure, this will be more and more important in the future. We have to understand that business. It's a different business. Mm-hmm. And let's say the challenge is, yeah, if this is getting more and more, if more and a bigger and bigger portion of the business is transferred from the classical owned business mm-hmm. to the shared business, what does that mean for our business? Mm-hmm. So our answer is we have to understand that much better. Mm-hmm. We are partnering. Mm-hmm. No? We are in China, we have a joint venture in the car sharing business. No? Mm-hmm. We are have activities, joint venture, in the ride-hailing business. Mm-hmm. We, of course, partnering with lots of different Chinese companies, for example, talking about voice, yeah. speech dialogue system. So the challenge is you will not be able to do that anymore alone mm-hmm. yeah, and mm-hmm. just captive.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There you need to select the right partners to partner and look for a more holistic ecosystem mm-hmm. yeah, for the future. This is the transformation process mm-hmm. yeah, we have to master mm-hmm. yeah, that we as a company, as we are, as a classical up to now hardware-driven company, yeah, develop into this direction of a software-driven company, of a mobility server, a mobility provider, yeah, and yeah, to have a future.
Yeah, thank you. So it's a cultural transformation also for the automobile companies. I think, Nick, there are some keywords in what Mr. Heitzman said that will resonate with you. Your background is also in hardware. In hardware manufacturing, and now you are building a smart speaker, which is essentially a loudspeaker that is really intelligent and can communicate with you. But I think one of the big challenges you have is software as well, and integrating that. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Yes, exactly. I resonate that. So my career is in 25 years of consumer electronics. So the way I see consumer electronics these days is quite different from 25 years ago. It used to be churning out hardware advancements. But these days, hardware is very commoditized. You want to produce them in mass quantities. Where is the personalization? Where is the individuality? And they are to be found in the software. And then beyond software also, the ecosystem, the managing of the data. So actually beyond hardware and software, it's become an ecosystem play and understanding people and behavior. So moving from hardware to software to psychology to where are the limits of AI. So all that has come together, and like us too, for me personally, luckily my background is computer engineering, which is hardware and software, but of course 25 years of hardware, how do I move myself out of hardware? By first partnering. So I brought in a chief of software that also has 27 years in software, and he was looking for how does he get his software distributed into more hardware. And then I brought in a 37 years business in experience in content, in music production. And so what I would like to say is actually the ecosystem indeed is not about doing it yourself. It's bringing expertise from hardware, software, content, and maybe even more. Mm-hmm. And here I do see an important role in hardware still, because hardware is physical. It's physically present. Imagine if the cars, the mobilities become hubs. If you're talking about traffic conditions, nothing knows it. No other systems knows it better than actual cars on the road. It becomes a traveling hub. That's why we are very concerned with the privacy and AI and what does it do with the car. It's no longer just hubs in your homes. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. So
you're saying that because there is so much complexity in the world around us, yeah. and because people want to have a individualized, a personalized experience, you need software systems that are intelligent, that can communicate, but at the same time, retain as a user all of the data and be sure that this is safe.
Yes.
Is this something that can actually be done? Holger, do you have examples of AI systems that actually can do this?
Can do what?
Learn from user experience, but also respect their privacy. And because what I understand from talking to you is that we need to have these systems so that we can increase creativity. That's going to be essential to our culture. But we also want to control them.
Yes, there are many, 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 many examples. The whole machine learning process only works in a way that you create enough feed for the machine to define its own rules for solving problems. Mm-hmm. So everything that is based on machine learning is working exactly the way that you just described, which is, by the way, another problem that we have to face. So how good is the footage that we feed into the machine learning system in order to learn? Mm-hmm. So when we look at self-driving cars, for example, I think the footage that companies like Volkswagen have already, like video footage or live footage from test drives, is already very, very well in order to train an AR to cope with standard situation on a street. But what happens if, like, I don't know, a star falls down, and crashes the whole street within a millisecond? Is that a situation that the car could deal with because it was never trained before, because you weren't able to train it?
Peter, do you have to, take this into consideration when you design? I mean, does your job now go from designing a sculpture to designing a whole software system around it? How does that work?
So I'm glad that I'm not the software designer also. But sure, we are in close contact with that. So, and I know at least a lot or some of the problems autonomous cars are facing. One example, as you mentioned, is imagine you go somewhere and then in autumn when from the trees leaving, the leaves are falling, right? Or, and it could be hard, it could be soft, but the car need to learn that, what it is, right? Or if there's something on the road, like a balloon, and the balloon is soft, so we as people, we know it's soft, there's no risk for us, so we can just hit it. A car needs to learn that, and that's why every brand has to do tremendous testing. To not forget all those possibilities which can happen to protect the passengers.
Thank you. Daniel, when you play music, when you improvise cadenzas for concertos and so on, you are also walking this thin line, right? That is somehow comparable to what the machine has to do when it interprets all of the data that is around it. You as a musician, you have to constantly understand what are the other musicians doing. Do you sometimes feel like you can actually create also, together with a technologist, a very intelligent system simply because of your experience as a musician? Is somehow being a creative person a useful skill nowadays in this super complex world? Do companies like Volkswagen approach you for that?
Wow, that's a question. It's interesting that I've never thought of improvisation in terms of computers, let's say, but I see where you're going. I would say the thing about improvisation and creativity is that it always has an element of chaos. And chaos in our world is an extremely positive word. Because chaos in music opens up a whole world. I'm not convinced that chaos in technology is yet something we want to really examine. Because the replications are, of course, problematic. So, yes, I think there is an element of that. I think being as creative as you possibly can is what defines oneself as an artist. I see the constraints of technology. I talked earlier about the fact that it's wonderful to connect with your audience, to walk out of a concert hall and have an email from someone in China or in America. The flip side to that happened to me in Brussels About a year ago, I was playing a concert, and in the middle of the concert, the Skype call signal went off very loudly. And I'm playing away, and I hear this Skype call, and I'm thinking someone's going to turn it off. But no, the lady who had the tablet, she actually took the call and started talking to her partner and said, yes, he's still playing, look. And she held the tablet up, and I looked across the room, and I could see this lady sitting in wherever it was, Africa, looking at me, waving to me from the stage. So, you know, there are barriers, and chaos and technology, I think, is somewhere further away. That's what I think makes this discussion and mobility and cars so interesting, because chaos is not a possibility. You have the element of safety. You have all these kind of things that has to be maintained. Mm-hmm. So I think the challenge, without being a tech person myself, but I think the challenge will be to combine all of those elements, mm-hmm. to give it an element of personality, of freedom, of improvisation, mm-hmm. of safety, mm-hmm. And of completion at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was actually asking about this element of being creative within boundaries, right? Because in music we have, you know, 12 notes, we have certain styles that we have to be active in, but we create a lot of worlds in this constraint that we actually have. And I want to go another round, especially talking to the designer and someone who's working with voice-enabled systems. When the interface to the computing system becomes the voice and the ears, how does that change the way that you are actually thinking about the product as a designer? I mean, right now when we sit in a car, there are lots of knobs, you know, in the plane even more. But is this really going to be there in the future? How do you approach this problem, Peter?
So you mean if the car is just listening? And
yeah.
Everything on based on... I hope it works better than currently Alexa or the Echo system from Amazon in the future. But we as a designer, we think a lot about, I call it the personification or humanization mm-hmm. of the car.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's important in the moment when the car becomes intelligent and in the moment when I can interact like I do with human, then it must transform from something very abstract from a machine to something more personal. And some people would prefer something cute. Imagine mm-hmm. you have an avatar there, mm-hmm. which is cute. You can touch and you can feel it, and it reacts to you when you talk. This could be one possibility. Maybe for customers who are young, who don't need to drive a license to use their car, right? Or others like something more robot-like. So mm-hmm. we work on solutions how people will perceive and how the relationship will change to the car,
mm-hmm.
and how much do you want to become this human, right? Also mm-hmm. in the way it's designed, interior and exterior. So, mm-hmm.
great. Yeah, Daniel, please.
May I ask a question on that sense? Because we've talked a lot about driverless cars and this idea of the experience and the future, which is fascinating, and the idea of a design and you go into a car which is not a car and you have your whole world with you. And I get that, and I'm sure it's going to be amazing. Personally, I love to drive. I love to get behind the wheel. I love to feel the car. I love to feel the speed, the danger, whatever you want to call it. I want to be part of that. So what is the future for the driver?
It's a very good question. And I think for me also, as I love to drive too, especially the horsepower and everything, right? So, and I'm a fan of course, the combustion engine still of the sound.
The sound of it, yes, I was about to say.
Okay, so the AI can do a nice sound also for me if it's electric. But I think it will go towards something which is happening already, and this is driving assistance. So what it happens, it started all with ABS, right? It helped me to brake. It supported and made the cars more safe. Now, lane assistance and all that. So I think the future of the driver will never disappear. The car most likely will be able to drive for you if you want. And in the other way, it will support you. So imagine you go on a racetrack and you have a screen in front of you, and it shows you the ideal line to how to go, and it trains you how to be a better race driver. Mm-hmm. Or in the traffic, if you drive fast than where you are allowed to, like in Germany, it will support you by voice and visually to protect you better. So I think this assistance is getting more. Mm-hmm.
But will it have the override switch?
Like today, you can still turn off ESP, right?
When you decide, I'm going to be analog today, will it have that switch?
Yeah. I think it's the answer we also have there, like in Porsche, where you have different driving modes, where you can set from a lot of support, or you can disable all the supporting functions. This will always stay.
Great, Nick.
It's very important to separate the want to drive and the need to drive. Yeah. I think the need to drive, we don't want any of this. Let's just get in, get there. And then when you want to drive, it is about leisure. It's about pleasure. Yeah. So I think the difference to separate those two needs is very important.
Tim, you also
still
wanted
to... Coming originally out of the music industry, I was sitting, being a CEO in a lot of international meetings where I was confronted with other people in the music industry who went to the music industry because they love music and they love records. And they were sitting there talking to each other saying, oh, this moment when I take out a record out of the case and I have a look at the cover. And the moment I put it on a player, I put the needle on it, and you have got this sound before the music starts. And everybody knows, like, it's so lovely. And we will never get rid of it. And actually, we got rid of it. So the key important information, maybe to you guys, is like, the vinyl still has got, I think, a market share of 5% globally. So there will be a certain percentage, it might be for driving higher than for vinyl, that sticks to it. But the change will come. It's kind of key important not to take Daniel as the one who it feels like everybody. Most people simply want to move from A to B. Mm-hmm. And have to be serviced in doing so. And so you're clearly a mobility, not a car driving company. And I even think for a lot of people, the ability to have got a good platform in there that works for you is at least as important, it's hard to say to a designer, than the physical design. Just take Samsung Galaxy versus Apple. Looks nearly the same. So it's not so much a difference the way the product looks. The difference is how does the platform interact with my content?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That seems to be the key thing in the future.
Great. I mean, you see, there are lots of topics that we could, you know, continue to discuss. Some things that we haven't touched upon. I think if I have to draw a summation or a conclusion, which I have to because the time is running out, I would say that creativity... and technology are really there to make our future better and to really help us be more productive. And the same is true for music. It is true for the car. So please help me in joining my thanking my panel for a really very stimulating discussion. Thanks a lot, guys.